podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Cricket Unfiltered. It's our wrap of day two from Headingley. The test is delicately poised with Australia leading England by 142 runs with six wickets in hand. Another phenomenal day's cricket. I've got two guests to wrap it up with me. Joining me is Sharbul Khoury from Crickblog, who you've met before on the show. Sharbul, welcome back. How are you?
I'm good, Menace. Thanks for having me, mate.
How are you battling through these late nights with the Ashes?
Yeah, doing okay, but the problem is the little 18-month-old wants to get up at 6:30 in the morning, so you lose a bit of sleep in the morning. Does it help?
Well, you're battling through. Thanks for joining me. And, of course, the original co-host from this podcast, journalist James McSmith, affectionately known as Macca. Macca, how are you?
G'day, Menace. It's a pleasure to be here, mate. Thanks for having me. A bit of a late night, but I'm feeling fine.
Good. Well, we've got a lot to talk about. England started the day with seven wickets in hand and were reduced to 237 all out, with Pat Cummins taking a stunning 6 for 91. And then in reply, Australia battled to 4 for 116, with the crucial wickets of Smith, Labuschagne and Khawaja going just before stumps, leaving Australia in a precarious position with the figure of Ben Stokes looming in the fourth innings run chase. But let's start with the beginning of play. Sharbul, I'll start with you.
Yeah.
Very good session for Australia in the morning. They took four wickets, and at that stage, it looked like they were going to grab control of the match.
It looked like it, mate. And it was perfect start getting Root early, and Besto, the shot that he played against the Spirit of Cricket by Smith to take that catch, by the way. For me, Besto looks... he looks distracted. He really does. So Australia took advantage of that. I thought bowled beautifully in that first session, bowled with a lot of intent. I thought Boland was unlucky not to get a wicket as well.
Well, he had that one off Stokes where...
Very close.
If the umpire gives it out and it's reviewed, it's upheld. I mean, only inches in it.
Yep, absolutely. So I thought overall as a unit, the Aussies bowled beautifully in that first session. And then I think we'll touch on it, maybe lost a bit of control in that second session and then in the final session as well. But... yeah, great start. And I think Cummins has got Root's number as well. That's another thing to keep an eye out for the rest of this game, the run chase, and then in the series too. I think that's nine times he's dismissed him in Test cricket. He's got him in that corridor again. So, no, it was a great first session from the Aussies.
What did you think, Macca? Australia had England 7 for 142 at lunch and looked to be running away with it.
Menace, I can't help but think, again, Australia's just lost a great chance to really, you know, go for the jugular, to really, you know, dominate this test like they could have last one. And as you said, it's now delicately poised on a knife edge, isn't it? And I just wonder why we haven't had that killer instinct, both with the bat. And I know, obviously, bowled well. Cummins was fantastic. But, you know, we really should have shut them down for a lot. You know, we kind of let them get away there at the end, didn't we? And then with the bat, like you mentioned, at the end of the day, we just didn't really press the advantage. I just don't know why. Are we lacking that killer instinct? Is it fair to say England are good at fighting back? I just can't help but think it's a sort of missed opportunity. Obviously, the game's still very much in the balance, of course. It's not won and lost at all. But I just really think Australia should have really dominated the whole day and had the opportunity to do so, but didn't take it.
Well, I mean, the key phase straight after the lunch break. We get Wokes last ball before lunch, effectively. Wood comes out. Straight away, we go short to him, completely abandoned conventional wisdom, which would be line and length, top of off, couple of good Yorkers, get him caught in the cordon. Instead, we go short, and he smashes, 24 off just eight deliveries with three sixes and one four. And all of a sudden, the scoring rate goes straight up. And I know he didn't make too many Wood, and they got him out playing a big shot. But that was 24 gifted runs, which could be vital in the match. And I think it just showed, I don't know why we went short to the tail straight away. Even when Broad came out, I know he got out hooking, but it just felt to me we kind of lost control a bit. And I agree with you. We didn't put the foot on the throat. There was also a couple of drop chances. I mean, Murphy and Stark both dropped tough chances off Murphy, off Stokes. So, I mean, to me, it was just a bit sloppy at the end there.
Yeah, 100%. And I think it was a bit of the same at Lords, is like when sort of England starts to get going, we don't know what to do in a way. And yeah, I agree with you. I don't see why we'd go short. We'd back our line of length, and because we did that so well in the first session, then we changed it up completely. And I had a go at the, actually the England tail yesterday. I was actually worried about Stokes. And if someone stays in with him rather than swing in themselves, England could have got a pretty handy lead there. So Australia have got, as again, England to thank for some brainless cricket on their part at times.
Well, you're right. Broad threw it away. That was a good catch.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, all they got, if Stokes bats a little bit, if you know, he ran out of partners in the end, Ben Stokes, and yeah, it's someone who's hanging in with him. Mate, he was unstoppable at times there. So,
I was thinking the same, mate. Like, yeah. I thought, you know, I really was thinking, like, I couldn't believe they'd, you know, whittled down our lead. But then, you know, you think back to the days of when, you know, Steve Waugh was captain of Australia and the tail had to hold their own, and Gillespie and even McGrath always batted like he was batting for his life. I just couldn't understand why, you know, Broad couldn't get, I know he rarely does it, I know he's got a test 100 to his name, but why can't he get behind it, play a bit more sensibly? And that's why, yeah, when you talk about Bairstow being rattled, I think the Poms are just, they have been a bit mindless, or their game sort of awareness hasn't been what it should be at times.
Yep, agree.
And I do think when the batting team comes at Australia hard, sometimes we look a bit flustered in the field. And I think,
absolutely,
you know, we were certainly at that point. Stokes had us at his mercy. And you're right. You know, had Broad not tried to hit the ball out of the park, he probably could have stuck with Stokes like he did at Lords a bit longer. And England might have a lead. Glad they didn't, though.
Yep.
So Murphy got the final wicket, Ben Stokes out for 80. I guess the one thing looking at the fourth innings is Ben Stokes and Ollie Robinson both look severely hampered at the crease. They both couldn't run by the end. So whatever we set England, you know, how effective is Stokes going to be? He can't have a runner. Ollie Robinson's a walking wicket. So hopefully if we can get that lead up around 250 plus, we should be okay. But yeah, at the end there, the figures for Australia, Stark finished with 2 for 59. Murphy got Stokes. He finished with figures of 1 for 36. Took a bit of tap. I thought bowled okay. Did think, though, you could tell he was a bit rattled when Stokes went at him.
I think they looked as though they'd planned to go after him. You can understand that, can't you? He was under a bit of pressure coming in for the line. You can see they were always going to target him, and I think they did so successfully, yeah.
And then the big one, though, Pat Cummins, 6 for 91. His ninth fifth wicket haul in Test cricket. He now has 235 wickets at 21.84 at Test level. A truly phenomenal bowler. And I actually thought that was, you know, the typical captain's innings that you might see with the bat, but with the ball.
Yeah.
I mean, he took the ball, mate. He steamed in, he gave it everything. He knew that the team needed a decisive performance for one of its biggest players. And when you look at the wickets he got, you know, he got Duckett, Brooke, Root, Moeen Ali, Wood and Broad. I mean, it's a phenomenal performance from Cummins. And, 6 for 91. You know, I think, Macca, he's not the best on-field captain, but you have to say he does lead with the ball.
He does, Matt. And I know we've spoken about this, how he can let the game drift at times. And obviously, he's got a lot on his shoulders. And I can't help but think the point we made before about sort of letting them back in it, you know, if Steve Smith was skipper and, you know, was giving his all in that respect, while Cummins just had to worry about the ball, I can't help but again think that maybe with a few more judicious, you know, field placements. And I just can't understand it just seems to me we just play into Stokes's hands, you know, like you mentioned. Mm-hmm. With Wood, like, what can the fourth innings? Can we just start with a conventional field, you know, two or three slips in a gully? I don't understand it, Charbel. Like, I agree with you, mate,
100%. And a lot of the time, giving some easy singles through point to the new batters, like Moeen Ali. I remember one ball he was beaten beautifully by Boland, and then he gets off strike the next ball easily through point. It's just like those little things build the pressure when you can. And also with Stokes, I feel the bowlers feed his strength. He loves to hit over the leg side, and they keep bowling in those areas. Go a bit wider to him.
Yeah, just watching those highlights again this morning and some of those sixes he hit, he was just standing there and waiting for them and delivering. Yeah. I mean, of course, it is a special talent and not everybody can do that, but it just is like, mate, he just was waiting on it, you know?
Exactly. You're feeding his strengths. You know, a bit more T20 bowling in those situations, not a bad thing either. Just go a little bit wider. And you know, get a cover in, get maybe a point in and try get him caught there. Try think about getting him out as well. Yeah, that's important.
Yeah, a bit more conventional. Yeah, and I think, you know, Men has mentioned it before, like obviously our fielding hasn't helped. I know he's kept a reasonably high standard, but obviously Smith's drop at Lord's gave them a lot more sniff than they would have, and some of the fielding last night could have been better as well. So when we say we're not pressing, you know, put the foot on the throat, that's another reason why we're not. But again, it's good that we've been able to rebound and recover from those sort of misadventures.
Yeah, and we're not nearly catching as badly as Butterfingers Besto is, so we've always got to look good against that. So straight in bowl, adding them for 237. If you're England, I'm disappointed with some of the shots. I mean, Moeen Ali slogging at a short ball, Johnny Bairstow poking at a wide half volley. We talked about the tail. So they didn't bat very sensibly. But then Australia comes out just before tea, and it's the old story. Stuart Broad got David Warner in the third over.
Set your phone
Warner,
to it. Set your watch to it.
17 times he's got him now in Test cricket, 3 times this series, twice in this match. Warner out for 105, left Australia 1 for 11. I do not think Warner's position is in jeopardy now, considering he made some runs in the first 2 tests and the fact that we're 2-0 up. I think Warner will probably get to the SCG and retire at home. Macca, do you think Warner will make it that far?
I'm ambivalent here. I'm stuck in 2 minds. Like, I think Warner's, he's obviously been a bit of a political animal throughout his career. And I know there's been a lot of pushback with Cricket Australia and the board, and there's been a lot of dramas there. But obviously he tried to get out in front of the issue and said, I want to retire at the SCG. And as we know, very, very, very few people, including Sir Donald Bradman, don't get to choose how they end. And I think pride comes before a fall. There's a bit of hubris there, obviously, with Dave Warner. But as you sort of mentioned before, there's no real alternative. And I always think that, you know, when it comes to a series like this, you pick and stick. You decide who your openers are for the series and you stick with those guys. You don't have dropping them after 3 tests or 2 tests, anything like that. So I think you're right. He'll stay at the end of Ashes and he probably will play through the SCG. And, you know, given his record and the dearth of options, he probably deserves to. I just wonder, once he's gone, will we have some issues in that opening position? Because we haven't had much of a succession plan. Perhaps.
Yeah. Very good point. I think we will, especially when you consider how well Khawaja has done. Shah, but where are you on Warner? Do you think he's going to make it? And I guess my disappointment around his dismissals in this test match is he's gone away from that positive intent we saw at Lord's. He was just poking at the decent deliveries, but I think he's actually got to maybe take the leaf out of Mitch Marsh's book and actually go harder. Yeah, but do you think he'll make it?
I think he went hard. I think the problem is he went hard at both deliveries in this test match. He pushed out too hard. When you talk about intent, you also talk about how well you're defending the ball and leaving the ball as well.
Steve Roy used to say that, defend with positivity.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the first things in particular, he pushed so hard at that ball, and that's a no-no opening the batting in England. I'm with Macca on this. I think he will get through this series and probably will get through the home series as well. Good. I think his home record is fantastic, and I think he will score runs at home against Pakistan. But I think McGrath's record over Atherton is in danger. There's only two more dismissals left to equal.
Of course, you know, once again, it brings up, like, when you think of people who have absolutely bowlers who have absolutely hypnotized batsmen, that comes to mind.
Unbelievable.
Warne and Daryl Cullen and obviously come to mind. I think Warne bamboozled him so much that he didn't play any more tests. That's why he didn't face him anymore. But it's just out of this world. It's like
crazy.
A snake,
it's just ridiculous.
Snake charmer and his copper, isn't it? It's just, I mean, I found it very interesting what Tubby Taylor said at the break interview after that dismissal. And he said he just was all at sea. He couldn't, you know, just to him, Warner looked completely out of sorts. And
exactly.
And I mean, you know, then Tubby started to defend Warner and say, oh, well, he's our first slip. He's been catching well. If we drop him, who's going to be at first slip? And I think if you're trying to justify his position in a team, you're really clutching for straws. I'm just thinking, God, like, but
and
you
technically
know,
as well, like how he's right back to a full delivery and playing the ball almost across it through mid on. And you know, getting caught in the slips. Look, when you talk about who can replace him, could Matt Renshaw be worse? I still rate him. I still think he's got potential. I think he'd be a good option for Australia. I think there's a player there. Maybe not
for Harris
right
Renshaw.
Now.
I don't think he was treated really badly by the selectors.
Yeah, I agree.
Sure. They could have backed him when he was a young kid, given him some confidence. Yeah. Instead, they pulled out the rug from him. So,
and they, you know, threw him in the middle order in India, where we all know that's a very difficult place to bat, even for a specialist middle order player. I still think there's a player there.
I think Harris and Bancroft are the two lining up for the opening position, and clearly that's what the selectors think, because they've kept Harris in the squad and sent Renshaw off to play some county cricket. So, but yeah, I think Warner will stay in there. So okay. Warner goes early. Australia goes to T1 for 29, and this is when you might hear Mad Menace again. You won't hear it as bad as you heard earlier this week, but. Labuschagne works really hard to get to 33. He gets dropped down the leg side. He gets dropped down the leg side just before getting out to Bairstow. Fumbles another one. You know, chance 1000 goes down for Bairstow this series. And then Labuschagne, who didn't look like getting out of Moeen Alley, swung across the line and hit it straight to deep mid wicket. And gifted Ali a wicket. That meant Australia was 2 for 68 after, you know, Labuschagne and Khawaja had worked really hard to get through some good English bowling. So Ali gets an annoying wicket. Labuschagne's 33 gone. And then Steve Smith comes out and tries to whip it over the leg side, hits it straight to mid wicket. He's out for two. The score's 3 for 72. And all of a sudden, you know, two of our best batters are gone to Ali when he really, I mean, he said it in the press conference afterwards. They were gifts. I mean, Shabal, you can go first. I mean, disappointing in that situation.
Macca, spot on when we talk about Australia putting the foot on the throat and keeping it there. That's another example.
Yeah.
In a good position, man. And two of our premier players doing that. Oh, like for me, I know conditions in the last 3 days are a bit iffy with the clouds and the rain and all that. So it might suit bowling, but you need as many as you can get, particularly, I don't care if Stokes is injured. You need as many as you can get in that fourth innings to counter his threat in particular. But just, yeah, when you got the foot on the throat, you got the advantage. I think Australia, that's another example of really letting it slip, you know, unforced mistakes. And that's another worry for Marnus in particular, another start getting out. When he was looking okay, I thought that was the best he looked yesterday in the series. He looked quite composed.
Did I read he hasn't scored a 50 in 16 innings? So he's obviously in a bit of a slump.
Yeah, so his average last in December 2022, Marnus's average was just under 61. It's now dropping rapidly down. I think it's around 53 now. So he's performing unders what you'd expect from him. I do like the fact that when Marnus is not in form, he still battles away and gets a tough 30 or 40. I think sort of the David Boone type innings where you're not in great form, but you stick out there. But I mean, yeah, frustrating that he got out for 33 in that situation.
Mez, I was just thinking last night, and I know this is common to a lot of bats, can be common to a lot of bats when they're scratching around for form. And obviously I mentioned Tubby Taylor before, and he's, you know, lack of a purple patch back in the day was one of the all-time lack of purple patches. But for me, Labuschagne, and speaking before the second test, when he talks about, you know, I don't get out the balls leaving like that, I just think he's working too much on his game. I think he's thinking about everything too much. I think he's working too hard as well. It just seems he's totally overwrought, overdoing things, over-emotionally invested. And I think maybe that shot was an indication that he was just totally, you know, burned out perhaps. And I know he wasn't at the crease for 6 days or whatever, but I just think, you know, yeah, he'd been concentrating on a million zillion things. Obviously he's changed around his technique a little bit. I just think that's probably indicative of that ridiculous shot that he played.
Well, Andrew McDonald, the Australian coach, said after play, he felt Labuschagne and Smith actually were both dismissed due to the pressure of the game, that he felt that the...
It's crazy. He's probably just coming out defending him in the public. You know,
I think that's a bit of a silly comment.
Australia were on the front foot in the game, really. You know?
No, it's a good point. So that was also Moeen Alley's 200th wicket, 200th test wicket. So congratulations. Well,
I mean, the thing there is, I guess, and whether you say, you know, they threw their wickets away, I mean, it justifies the selection of Ali, doesn't it? He's got two massive, massive wickets in the second innings of a game and brought England right back into it. So for what, you know, all the crap that he's copped, and it was an unusual selection, but it paid off in that respect, hasn't it?
And I flagged before the series, and you can go back to the Ashes preview. I said the annoying thing about Moeen Ali is he can get, like, Australia can throw their wickets away to a spinner like him. Like, he's just good enough to be exposed, like that he can hold up an end and he'll play on our frustration. Anyway, so just before stumps, Usman Khawaja was caught behind. Yes, Besso held on to one off the bowling of Wokes. Khawaja goes for 43. It's hard to criticize Khawaja with the series he's having. I mean, I thought that was a great knock. He anchored one end. He played sensibly. He'll be as disappointed as anyone not to get through.
It looked lazy, didn't it? Tired.
Yeah, just Wokes, though, he's very good at just pushing the ball across those left-handers, getting a hint of movement, and Bairstow dove away to his left like he was trying to catch a meat pie or something and snaffled a catch. So Australia were 4 for 90 at that stage. The door was open. But then, I mean, who'd have thought that we'd be talking about Mitch Marsh as the saviour, and our maybe the match hopes are riding on Mitch Marsh and Travis Head. Travis Head's 18 not out. Mitch Marsh, 17 not out. I mean, Macca, I'll start with you. Both exciting stroke players. I mean, the 2 hours to start play on the third day is going to be something to behold. It's going to be either, you know, a lot of runs or a lot of wickets.
Well, I think, you know, the vast majority of at least Aussie cricketers and maybe neutrals will want Mitch Marsh to score maybe another 100, won't they? Because he's obviously copped a lot of shit over a long, long time, a lot of it undeserved. And unfortunately, that's the world of social media that we live in these days, and you know, you'd love to ignore it. I think if I was Mitch Marsh, I would, but I guess it can't help but get to you. But you know, it'd be a great redemptive story, wouldn't it? And I mean, that footage of him, of old Swampy and the families, well, that was just fantastic, wasn't it? It showed how much it meant to them, and you'd love to see them get some runs. But at the same time, you know, it's been such a topsy-turvy series. You could easily see, you know, it's probably going to go down to the wire again, isn't it?
Yeah. Who knows what will happen in that first session?
I don't know if I can take another really, really close run, Chase. I think Australia, if they can get up to a lead of around 300, would be thrilled from here. And I think they can do it. I really think they can. You know, with Carey to come, Stark, Cummins.
The worry is Mark Wood against lower order. They cleaned us up pretty quickly, didn't they, in that first innings after
he's,
the
he's already injured probably. I mean, he's already injured. Like, he's probably not going to be able to finish the Ashes. No, I'm not joking. I think there was reports coming out.
Was there an injury?
A little niggle already. I mean, they'll keep it quiet until after the match, but yeah, so I think Australia from here, if they can get a lead up around 300, then they should feel pretty confident that they can defend it. Do you agree, guys?
I think you need to try and get as close to 300 as you can, yeah. And I think the bowling conditions, I think, will be pretty good on the last 3 days. When there is going to be play, I think there's going to be quite damp, overcast conditions. So a total in that region will be very hard to chase, I believe.
Yeah, man, I don't think we're going to have it easy. I think it might go down to the wire. I mean, obviously, when Stokes is in there and he's swinging, you know, who knows what can happen.
Yeah. Cummins throwing the fielders everywhere, scratching his head.
I can't go through it again, man.
I really hope they have a rethink of that, but it doesn't really look like they're going to.
All right, well.
And, man, as we did want to mention that Charvel mentioned how, you know, Johnny Bairstow's just seems completely lost at sea. There was a very, very funny post-try celebration in the rugby league last night when they totally mocked the dismissal of Bairstow at Lords. And I think it just sort of goes to show that, you know, the absolute ridicule and disdain that Bairstow is being seen with in Australia now. I mean, coming up with a ridiculous excuse like that when he'd just done it, you know, before. It's quite interesting when you sort of see the reaction to that, and also to just how everybody kind of is looking at it. I mean, it's obviously gone viral on social. It's a fantastic piece of footage. Canberra Raiders in the NRL, you'll be able to find it. But I just thought, man, is it for me, it kind of told me how much the, you know, ridiculed that we thought that you know that that Vesto's poured on himself. And also, you know, I think from the very start, England offered up excuses. They felt that the first game was a win, the first match was a win. And yeah, so Bairstow's coming out with those, you know, excuses in the second test when, you know, obviously it was an interesting moment, but it was one of many, wasn't it, that swung the test. And now they're coming out with injury excuses, you know. They were going on and on about it at the coverage last night. And then as I just did some research before the podcast, and I've actually realised that the English cricket team isn't the first team in history to suffer injury in sport. So
guess what happened in the very last test match? Who got injured for us?
Exactly.
Oh, well, what a great way to leave it. Great way to leave it.
So that was a bit of mad metas for you, mate.
I loved it. No, England, in their point of view, are like 3-0 up in the Ashes right now.
I feel like it.
Baseball's winning. All right. Well, Shahbul, thanks so much for joining me for our day two wrap. Where can the listeners find your show and find you?
Yeah, you can find me at Crickblog TV on YouTube. So we did do actually a piece on the whole Alex Carey, Johnny Bairstow controversy, which I don't think it's a controversy at all. Or you can find me on Twitter at @crick_blog. Find me there.
Thanks. Great stuff.
And the blog itself, it's crickblog.net, where we cover the game.
Perfect. And Mackie, I'm sure the listeners can find you at a Roosters game or on realestate.com.au, somewhere like that.
That's it, mate. Thanks a lot, man. I really enjoyed it. Thanks, Jarbo.
Thanks, everybody, for listening. Thank you. We'll be back with a wrap of day three.
This is a Piccolo Podcast production.
Sports Social Podcast Network.